Hello and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. This would be the July 13th, Friday the 13th edition of the Laughing Place podcast. As you're listening to this, if you're listening on opening day, the Tower of Terror is celebrating its 13th birthday, which is pretty exciting.
Woohoo!
Yeah. So, anyway, my name is Dewey, and with me today are Fanboy.
Hello, humans.
That guy, Rebecca.
Hey.
Don't see Captain John over there. I'm kind of, no, he's not hiding, and he couldn't make it today. Rumor is he's out betraying his captainhood and, seeing a film from a rival studio.
Stupid AOL Time Warner.
Yeah, so, but we hope Captain enjoys Harry Potter, and, next time we'll be more careful on how we schedule things.
Is he dressed up as Mad-Eye Moody again?
I don't know, did he do that before?
Yeah, I don't know if he did it this time.
I don't even know who Mad-Eye Moody is, so I'm not much help. Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Let us know what you're thinking on any topics. And after last week's show, some of you did let us know what you're thinking. We talked a lot of Ratatouille last week, so that's where we're going to start again this week with some of the feedback we've received about our reviews. Some agree, some don't. Let's start with one who more or less agrees. Well, judge for yourself. Sir at XS Tech wrote an extensive post on the discussion boards letting us know what he thought about Ratatouille, and I'm just going to read some of that here. He says, and just a review from last week, Rebecca and I absolutely did not like the film one bit. Captain John loved the film. I think he called it one of the best, if not the best, animated film he's ever seen, and Fanboy was somewhere in the middle but definitely gave it a thumbs up, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Sarah at XS Tech wrote, I, too, felt a bit underwhelmed by Ratatouille. I left feeling that the film was very well done, there wasn't anything I could point to as a problem with the film, and if I never saw it again, that would be just fine. Very weird. It was just like going to see any average romantic comedy or something nice, entertaining for 2 hours, nothing that stayed with you any longer. Upon further examination, there are a few things about the movie that I absolutely loved and a few scenes that were total head-scratchers as to their inclusion or execution. Later on, he goes on to say, as for what I didn't like, the one scene that stands out is after Remy's dad takes him to the exterminator store, that weird confrontation that they have on the sidewalk. Did that not seem totally forced to anyone else? Here we think the film's about learning to pursue your passions, and this weird dialogue they have is all about how humans and rats can live together in harmony. Remy's statement about how it takes one person to make the difference was so out of the blue, I find myself leaning forward and looking at the reactions of everyone else in my row. It would have fit if Remy had been struggling to overcome a fear of humans or something. Suddenly, the decision to be the person to make that choice or whatever it is, he said. Obviously, that struck XS Tech a little weird. And then finally, he says, in short, I too am floored at how great the reviews from all parties are for this film. It's certainly not a kid's film, too complicated with the illegitimacy plot and critic reviews, and just too much dialogue to keep most kids interested. And it's too inconsequential for most adults' tastes. By inconsequential, I mean that while there's a message, anyone can cook, it's not the sort that will give most adults a big thrill. It's a very Disney message, idealistic and sappy, and like I said, not portrayed with any particular strength. And then we got the exact opposite from Bruce Evans in Tucson, who wrote us an email. On your reviews of Ratatouille, you really didn't get it. Everyone Can Cook translates into Follow Your Dreams, so it follows a Disney scheme. I think you overanalyzed the whole film. My daughter, 5 years old, loved it and has seen it twice. She, like her dad, is a foodie, so maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. You have your opinions, but to be so far off to the critics and the ratings websites, it seems like you are all wrong.
Yeah.
We're wrong?
Well, that's not the first time. I mean, but that's okay. Nobody needs to like everything. There's nothing. I mean, there's no. It's an opinion by definition. Right. There's no right and wrong.
I thought it was funny that the first one I read mentioned how the movie was about the message of the movie was anyone can cook, and then Bruce Evans writes that's just a metaphor, and the message of the movie is really follow your dreams. And it got me thinking, what is? Because I've heard both from people. And, I mean, to me, the message of a movie was anyone can cook. Was it meant to be something more than that?
I don't know. Apparently anybody can make a CGI movie. That's just my thought, because this is just another, these movies need to be special. I mean, we have all these movies that are going out, that Barnyard and everything like that you need these movies to strike a chord. And if it doesn't strike a chord with somebody, they're not going to like it. If it strikes a chord with you, there's a lot of terrible movies that I like because, I mean, there's something I found appealing about it. I admit they're not great films, but I like watching them. So the opposite can be true. It didn't click with somebody, it's not going to click with you.
Obviously, but I guess here I see something more. I mean, yes, it's certainly subjective whether or not it clicks with you or doesn't click with you, but whether or not a film is a really good film is a little bit more objective.
Well, and I think it – I mean, apparently it is a good film. By most matrixes that's judged by. It's doing well financially. It's doing –
well, that's not one of the
– No, but I mean if it wasn't good, people wouldn't see it. I mean, word of mouth is fantastic on it. Word on the street is good. The critics love it. It has the highest rated Rotten Tomatoes score of, 100% cream of crop. You can't do much better than that.
Not much.
And so it's loved. But that, I mean, I don't like Gone with the Wind. So shoot me.
I'd like to.
Please don't.
Okay. Rebecca?
I don't really have anything to say. I don't like rats. So therefore, I didn't like the movie. But what I did realize was this weekend, I watched The Rats of Nim. It's a rat movie. It's a bunch of mice. But because of the way that they were handled, much more anthropomorphized, it didn't put me off in the same way that Ratatouille did. So, I mean, it would not surprise me if the exact same film were made, but not rats, if I wouldn't enjoy the film. You know, so I can't. It's hard to comment beyond that.
Secret of Nim is perhaps one of the scariest movies ever made.
It is very creepy. It's a very disturbing movie.
I'm not quite sure I still get it. It's one of those movies that as you see as a kid, you don't get it, and then you see it later, and you're like, okay, I get a little bit. I mean, as a 7-year-old, I wasn't quite into the National Institute of Mental Health, so maybe I didn't get those allusions, but maybe I should have been. But that's a creep. I'd rather much rather see Ratatouille than Secret of Nim.
Yeah, Secret of Nim for me. It struck me when I saw it in theaters when I was little. It scared me a little bit, but I remember being very interested by it. I remember when that week when the school paper had the Scholastic where you used to buy the books, from the mm-hmm. Scholastic company. I bought the novel so that I could, read the novel that it was based on and whatnot. Actually, I didn't buy the novel it was based on. I think I bought the novelization of the film itself. But
isn't that redundant?
No, not in that case. Yeah, not in that case.
I bought the novelization of Secret of Nim 2, which is definitely scarier.
So, I don't know. So, I've been talking a lot with some friends whose opinion I really respect on animation. I think that they've really helped me to see this. Just a matter of, I agree with Sir at XS that everything he says in that first sentence. There's nothing I can really point to as a problem with the film as far as its, specific construct or its artwork or whatnot. But it just, I didn't really care for it.
I think it's funny that, no disrespect to Sir at XS Tech, but I can't stand Alien Encounter. And so obviously he has some affinity for it, and I know many people that do. Mm-hmm. So it just shows that some people like things that I can't stand. Some people can stand things that I
don't confuse yourself
And I think Bruce doesn't really I think Bruce kind of overstates how we felt on it. So, because it was we were just expressing how we felt on it. I don't really think we expressed opinions that were far off from the critics, except, there were our opinions. So, I don't know.
I think we did.
Really?
You and I did. I mean, the critics, even these two, I think these guys are closer to how we feel than they are to the critics. I mean, the critics, to my reading, thought this was just one of the best movies ever, certainly one of the best animated movies ever. They didn't just think it was pretty good. They thought
You know what? Here's what boils down to, for me, the plot flaw in Ratatouille and why I don't care for it and why it didn't connect with me. And that is the plot point of the film, the major point of the film, the lesson I'm supposed to get from the film is anyone can cook. And yet at the end of the film, Linguini is not cooking. Mm-hmm. Remy is cooking, but he could cook from the beginning of the film. It was a natural gift.
Right, and Linguini clearly wanted to cook.
No, but it was a natural gift. My thing was that if anyone can cook, then at some point there should have been some moment of something where Linguini, who didn't have the skills that Remy was born with, would have blossomed. And wow, yeah, here it is. But now he says that it's supposed to represent the fact of follow your dreams and they'll come true. I can get that. That I'm behind 100%. And yeah, I think that's what the film, I think in reality, that's what the film is about. Follow your dreams. Remy following his dreams, and that's what happens. But I think because of the anyone can cook message, it got that whole follow your dream element, I think for me, got shelved. Because I attached that to Linguini, and when that didn't happen, it left me flat.
But the movie itself admits that when they say anyone can cook, they do not mean that anybody can cook. They mean that good people that have talent can come from places you don't expect. The movie is not saying if you work really hard, you can become a great cook, because that's not the way it works. But what they're trying to say is that you never know who will have the talent. So this Linguini, who by all accounts, you know, genetically should have the talent, doesn't. But a rat who should have no business cooking can.
Yeah, I didn't follow that.
That's what Ego says at the end. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. He says, I realize that when Gusteau says anyone can cook, he does not mean that anyone can cook,
right,
but that cooks can come from anywhere.
And so in that moment, that part of the film I really appreciated. Ego, that's the only character in the film that I walked away from with any appreciation of. And I think it's because the way in which the other portion of the film was framed took me in a way – I thought I was going along with the film, and when it didn't go where I was where I felt like I had kind of been led to based on the initial setup – It just kind of left me flat. But because of the Ego character, I mean, I wrote online, if it weren't for Ego, I wouldn't have had much at all from this film. And I think it's because of what Fanboy just pointed out.
So the moral of this film is not follow your dreams. The moral of this film is don't make presumptions about what people can and can't do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's follow your dreams.
No.
And I mean, Bruce might think so, but it's cultivate and allow folks to express their talent.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pigeonhole people into preconceived ideas. That's what it's about. It's not saying I should work hard and become a famous football player, because no matter how hard I work, I will never become a famous football player. I don't have that talent. I have other talents that I work and try and suit my life to fit, and hopefully people will allow me, whether it's something I was born into or not, allow myself to express them.
And based on the flip side of that, if he were the son of Joe Montana, just because he's the son of Joe Montana, don't presume, therefore, that he is going to be a tremendous quarterback.
Or
he may actually not.
Or have any desire. I mean, Linguini doesn't want to be a cook.
I don't get that from the film at all. Those initial scenes where he's mopping up the floor, and he kind of looks over at the pot and he sees it. To me, that is somebody who has an interest in cooking.
See, to me, it just looks like some guy, some schmo that can't get himself and has a penchant for getting himself into trouble because he's just a goof off and not goof off, a screw up.
Interesting. I think this discussion maybe even helps me understand more why I don't like the film. I mean, I'm certainly not, what do they say, the smartest tool in the shed. But, you know, I am 36 years old, and I went to see what I thought was a kid's movie, and apparently I didn't get it. So, you know, that's not what I expect when I go see a Disney animated feature, but I need to change my expectations because I shouldn't pigeonhole Disney into a certain place. That's the whole point of the film.
Yeah, but I think that the...
To use a French word. Touché.
But I think that... For me, it illustrates to me, I don't think it's a bad film, and I've never thought it was a bad film. It was just not a film I cared for.
Okay.
And I still think that. Because any film that keeps me talking about it so long afterwards and realizing layers upon layers, and not confusion, like, well, like, for you, the way you guys still talk about Pirates 3, where you obviously have no clue what's going on, but no, where you're kind of realizing deeper messages or way things connected with you. I mean, like, for example, with me, about a week after seeing it, I remembered two horrific memories from my youth that had to do with rats. And it was like, oh, yeah, I really do have reasons that I don't like rats. There are situations from, you know, that have happened to me that I don't like them. So.
How do you feel about robots?
I love robots.
How do you feel about dogs?
I like dogs. Dogs are great.
Good.
Too.
So the next two movies, you should be okay.
Yeah, I should be good. Well, I loved Cars and Rhett Wickham. Our animation historian and all-around good guy. Cars didn't connect with him. You know, he was like...
Did he drive?
Yes, he drives. Okay. So he has experience with cars. But Ratatouille, he adored. So we've had a lot of email exchanges talking about what worked for him with cars, what didn't work for me with Ratatouille. It's been very interesting. I've learned a lot.
I've learned a lot, too, just in this discussion that maybe it's a better movie than I give it credit for. I don't like it anymore, but now that I understand it better, maybe it's better than I'm giving it credit for. I still don't think it's necessarily appropriate, but, you know, who am I? Moving along, lots going on at the Disney World Resort, especially if your name is the Experimental Prototype Community of Tomorrow.
I like to call it Epcot.
Yeah, I like to call it Epcot, you know, 89.
Epcot, 94. Remember Splashtacular?
I've read about it.
We should have like a, when we have a very special podcast, like when we're going on vacation and pre-record them.
The smoking episode?
Yeah, the clip show version. We should do an all-star studded salute to Splashtacular.
Okay.
I have a story about Splashtacular. You want to hear it?
Sure.
Okay. If you go north of the Contemporary, you can see Gark, the big robotic dinosaur that was used in Splashtacular for no apparent reason. And what happened was they were building Splashtacular. It was a big show for Epcot 94, you know, the new era of Epcot. And the folks at Disney contracted out to build Gark kind of came back and said, nope, we can't do it. So Disney went and said, uh-oh. And they went to this new department that was called Ride and Show Engineering, which was supposed to be Disney World's own little engineering group, and said, help, we need to build Gark. And so they said, okay. So in the process of like 2 weeks, they built Gark, the robot dinosaur, as this department's first project. So that is why he is still out there 13 years after the show closed, as a tribute to the fact that he was Disney's first.
And where can you see him?
North of the Contemporary, if you go up north towards property, towards the apartments that are past the Magic Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
If you go up there, past the whatever they're building next to the Contemporary, and and you know the roundhouse where you see the trains,
right,
and monorails, just look to your right.
Really? Oh, that is very interesting.
Sorry, that was my old Gark story. Because he's still there, and you're like, geez, can you throw him away already?
I've never even heard of Gark. I mean, I don't know anything about Splashtacular.
After Splashtacular closed, he went to Tomorrowland for a show there, and he was dressed up as Elvis. And on Christmas, they put a Santa hat on him.
Oh, wow. This sounds like a field trip. I want to see Gark. But anyway, Epcot, the 25-year-old man over at the Walt Disney World's got a lot going on, including apparently the announcement that they're going to actually have a celebration, contrary to previous reports, of its 25th year.
Yay!
Yeah?
Celebrate the future, hand in hand.
Anybody know any idea what might be coming for that celebration?
For the 25th celebration of Epcot?
Yeah.
Well, the wand's coming down.
Yeah. I guess that's a reason to celebrate.
And they said it was an event, which to me means it's not a multi-month spectacular.
Okay.
I think it's just they were short dreams, and so they knew that all these people were blogging about how much they hated the fact that the wand was there and they wanted Epcot 25th. So this way they're able to get like 100,000 dreams right out of the way.
Count them. Rack them up. And then, of course, in addition
although to... Although it does make me wonder one thing.
What's that?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, one of LaughingPlace.com's reporter dudes was at Disneyland Resort and snapped a picture for Live, which is one of the features on Laughing Place where you can take a picture with your cell phone and put it up on the website. And it was of Ray Bradbury dining at the Storyteller Cafe. And at the time, I didn't really, you know, give it a second thought. But now that they've announced the Epcot event and knowing that Ray Bradbury was involved with Spaceship Earth, it just makes me wonder if... You know, I mean, I'm not saying that anything has happened. I don't know anything like that. I just, when I thought about it later, I'm like, hey, that's an interesting coincidence. I wonder if it was a coincidence. You know, he could have just been eating at the resort for all I know, but you never know.
Especially at Storytellers, that's Jimmy.
Well, no, it's a great restaurant, and you know, if you're a guest, I'm sure if you're a guest of Disney, you'd be staying at the. If you were a guest of that stature, you'd be staying at the, you know, Grand Californian Hotel, and it's a convenient dining location. But it just made me wonder.
What do you think a guest of Screech's stature would stay?
Well, isn't he just an annual pass holder? We used to see him at the piano all the time. Yeah. So
Candy Canyon, I think.
I don't think he can afford an AP anymore, from what I hear.
Well, I don't know. He made a lot of money declaring something. What was that? Wikipedia said.
He said he was his his farm or whatever was in foreclosure, and it was, and he sold T-shirts.
Oh,
and it was all a scam.
According to Wikipedia.
According to Wikipedia, which is always right. including the farm wasn't in foreclosure, and he never sent out the T-shirts.
So. Yeah, so he got pulled all this money.
And he was just about to go to jail, and then he got saved by the bell.
Oh, very good.
Didn't he like, get a lot of money for beating up Horshank?
Oh, and what was
the celebrity, one of those celebrity
fight
fights.
Club or something?
We saw him. Did we see him get into a bit of a shoving match at Disneyland?
We've heard
about it. Okay, yeah. So that's just an alleged. Neither one of us witnessed it.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Yeah, to quote Jim Rome. Allegedly.
See, what else? Rebecca and I'm not sure if Fanboy did, got to ride Spaceship Earth on its final day of operation prior to its
refurb.
Which, it cracks me up to see. Rebecca blogged about her 8 favorite things about Spaceship Earth. She's talking longingly. She hated that ride. She never wanted to go on Spaceship Earth.
It scares me. It was all rickety. I always felt like I was going to fall. But I did love it. But yet, it was scary.
So, you know, in honor of Spaceship Earth, I guess it's its 25th anniversary too, right?
Yeah.
That would be an opening day attraction.
Yeah, oh,
actually,
I know what
predated.
I want to.
They opened Spaceship Earth. They had a ceremony to open Spaceship Earth early as part of a Bell Systems now, which became AT&T, which then broke up and then became AT&T again, now in lowercase, to commemorate that. So it actually opened a week early, technically.
Okay.
But
I know what I want to see happen on the 25th anniversary.
What?
Wants to see Mickey on top of Spaceship Earth.
Have you ever seen that?
Nope.
I've seen like
person,
on TV.
I've seen
yeah, that would be cool.
I want to see
Randy Travis get up there and then slide down.
Oh, like he did at the Matterhorn?
I'm confusing. Randy Travis sang from up
he
there.
He sang from up there.
Indiana Jones slid
down.
So I want to see Shia LaBeouf slide down.
Shia, okay. We'll work on that.
Thanks.
No worries.
All right, so as you said, the wand's coming down. The crane is there.
Yep.
At Spaceship Earth, Rebecca, as I said, wrote about some of her favorite things. I thought we could maybe take a couple minutes. Maybe you could share one or two of your favorites, and I can get Fanboy to give his input as well, because it's such a long attraction that everyone's got some part they like. Rebecca?
Well, I wrote about 8 of them, so I'll pick one, and I'll say the finale where you see the Epcot. I mean, it looks like the Community of Tomorrow model. It's very similar. And there's the lights of communication going back and forth, and then the message that, you know, with the, you know, in essence, with the advancement of communication, our spaceship Earth is smaller, and there's a concept of, you know, maybe greater unity and, you know, a better place being formed by this. And then the canopy, the communications kind of form a canopy above you, and it almost, to me, I've always envisioned it being kind of like a current that carries you towards, you know, the better future. And then Spaceship Earth is wrapped up in all of this, you know, the bright lights of communication, all that imagery right there at the end. I've always really just, you know, enjoyed that. I know it can be more up to date. I know it's a bit of a dated, but I never, you know, at the time when I'm there, I don't think about how dated it is, because I just get caught up in kind of all the emotion of the moment. Then when I get off the ride and I think about it, I'm like, wow,
that's pretty dated.
That's pretty dated. What about you guys?
Fanboy?
We were talking about this yesterday, and the chariot
awesome.
Going off in the distance. I don't know why. Everybody loves that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really neat. The smell.
Uh-huh.
Always want barbecue after I go on Spaceship Earth.
The monk they added. Sleeping in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Add some much-needed humor. and do you remember, it used to be, before they added the safety video, the idea was you would start your vehicle, your time machine, and they would have audio from relatively present day, and you would go back in time, you'd hear JFK's speech, and then all the way back to the first radio broadcast.
That's cool.
But then they needed to tell you not to get out of a vehicle because someone did and got hurt. And so I think that was sort of a neat little symbolism thing that is kind of neat. I mean, you don't want WDI to get too overhanded with it,
mm-hmm.
because then – but, you know, you didn't need to get it, but when you did, it was cool. Also, every time I go on it, you know, you're in that big planetarium.
Mm. Oh.
And I think about how originally it was built – so that the track was actually – they put the rivets in to make the track longer, and it was going to go break outside the building. So it was like you're going to leave Spaceship Earth, and you were going to go outside at the back and see the world showcase like you were in space, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, and then come back in the building and go down the exit. But the thought of suddenly people being outside and 200 feet in the air, whatever, you know, 150 feet or whatever it would be, was not necessarily viewed upon as being intelligent. And they're probably right, but I think about how amazing that would have been, because you wouldn't have known from the front that it went outside and then suddenly you had this big reveal. But and you know, when you go back, I learned something else about it. I've been doing a lot of research on Spaceship Earth. You know, when you go back, words, they have the like video, the news clips from.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, they were supposed to have live video there, so you would be on it. But then they realized something bad might happen, and you don't want people going like, "Hey, that's my house," and like trying to run out of the vehicle. but they do update it like monthly with.
Really?
News footage of relative. That's why it never seems the same twice, because it's not, I mean, the people are the same, and they say like, "Wow, we're here with a breaking story of major news that's now breaking," and then they go to a different language. But it's the news footage is relatively new.
Oh,
I mean, not right now. Now it's not being played, and it probably won't be there when it reopens. But it was.
I had no idea.
Yeah, me either. I'd like to go check that out, but I can't.
Oh well, too bad.
My favorite part too was the chariot, but that's everybody's favorite part. So another part I really like is when you look at the Earth when you're on top of the ball and you're looking at the Earth on, and you realize you're way up in the sky inside the ball. It's, as Rebecca wrote in her blog, it's not like Mansion of Pirates or something where you have this facade, but it all takes place, you know, in the back. It's really right there, and you're inside. And I mean, I have not a mechanical bone in my body, but thinking of how long that ride is and just standing and looking at that thing and that they can fit it all in there, that totally amazes me. I've never seen a model of it or with the lights on or anything.
I know that many of my favorites are Echo Rebecca's, but the TV sequence when you're watching, you have that, you know, I guess Ozzie and Harriet and the football game and Walt, and that's just kind of cool. I mean, you can just, you know, you can just imagine a family at the dawn of the television age watching whatever sport they could find, and, you know, Ozzie and Harriet, and of course Walt Disney, and as the mother uses some old school remote control that had a wire, and if you notice, look, if you look at her hand, it's actually another index finger because they couldn't get a thumb to work.
Well, you have been researching, haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Anybody have any clue what's coming in this refurbishment?
Touchscreens.
Oh, that's right. You get the Horizon's ending, right?
Well, no.
You get to choose.
Like, you can be like, well, I don't know, choose your ending, but as much as my understanding is that you'd be in the. I mean, this isn't from any informed source, is that you would be on there and be like, oh, the Holy Roman Empire. Let me look it up. Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, so it's going to have a live link to Wikipedia.
Touché.
That's cool. That's cool. We can change the entries, too. That's the best.
This is Siemens entries, and it becomes, thank you.
Oh, you know, one thing I didn't talk about in the blog was I used to always confuse it with, I think it's Horizons. Is Horizons the one where you would enter and you would see the space shuttle launch in the big room, or was that?
Yes.
Yeah. So whenever we would come up to the top of the dome, I was always expecting that moment where you'd see the space shuttle on the. I would, and then we would see the starfield, and every single time I'd be like, oh, because I love being in planetarium, so the whole starfield thing is awesome. So every time I'd be all prepared for the space shuttle, and then I don't know why, but mentally I connected that with Spaceship Earth.
I remember as a kid going, okay, so you go up the Spaceship Earth, how do you come down? And mm-hmm. I was afraid it was going to be like some scary drop or anything. And then I realized, no, it's just the scary Tomorrow's Child song with some girl running through a forest or whatever she was running through. That was creepy. You remember that? Or was
no,
that before your time?
Before my time. I don't remember Spaceship Earth as anything other than what it is.
You need a YouTube, like, the old Tomorrow's Child
mm-hmm.
ending. It's,
you really should.
It's pretty grotesque.
I've heard,
I don't remember it.
I know I've read a rumor. Who does it now? Is it still Jeremy Irons right
yes.
now? I've heard a rumor that maybe Patrick Stewart.
I've heard that rumor. Did we start that?
It was somewhere on our site. I don't know.
Remember, because we were talking a few weeks ago about who we would want.
Yeah.
Did one of us come up with that, or that?
No, that was the name I was trying to think of because I had read it somewhere. Patrick Stewart.
Oh, and then we went into like Dan Patrick, who's leaving
oh,
ESPN,
yeah,
so he can't do. It.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've been there. One other recent change at Epcot I wanted to mention is Soarin',
which we tried to see.
We tried to go experience this, but the line just wasn't long enough. How sad is that? You go on Soarin', and the line's not long enough. They've added something we've heard is called Q-tivities.
Yeah. Yes, it runs in a long line of. Like they call it parade access control, you know, when you're at the Magic Kingdom. So when they play games with the guests, you've probably seen it at the Magic Kingdom. Those are called Pactivity. Yeah.
And the oversized inflated basketball goals and all that kind
of stuff.
Those
are called Pactivities. And sometimes when they have, like, they'll make balloon animals at the turnstiles, they'll call those Turntivities. Or if they're Fantivities over at Fantasmic.
So now we have
it's a long line of tivities.
And so what are the soaring Q-tivities? Who can...
Well, it's those big screens that featured the images of, like, the rainforest and the mountain. It's I think it's four large screens. Maybe five, but I think it's four. And what happens is they divide the queue area into different groups of as many, what, like 30 maybe people, I think, per section or so? I mean, it could be.
Yeah.
I just mean large numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by coordinating your efforts within the group, you make certain things happen on screen, and you can compete against the other screens. One of the ones I've heard of is it's a bird flying along, and you know you have to get everybody to kind of lean to the left or lean to the right or
stand up,
sit down, fight. That kind of thing in order to get your bird to operate faster than the bird beside you. So it's a lot. It's activities like that. It reminds me, for those of you who went to the Millennium Village, it kind of reminds me of the soccer game they had there, where you had your red side and your green-sided paddle, and you would turn it one way or the other depending on what your team kind of told you to do in an attempt to score a goal against the other people playing on the other team. So it kind of reminds me of that. So it's just very high energy. I know in the Orlando Sentinel article, someone complained that it really irked them because now people are going to be paying more attention to the game and it's going to create large gaps in the line and people aren't going to move forward and therefore it's going to lengthen their wait. But that's a misunderstanding of the realities of a theater queue. Soarin' seats many people at once, so therefore you're going to move, in essence, as a group periodically. So even if there's a large gap between you and the group in front of you, it's not going to lengthen
your
wait. Yeah, you're going to get on at the same time because it's a theater seating situation. So it seems like a great idea considering that, I mean, that queue moves very slowly, and with the way it's designed, I think it's very deceptive as far as how long your wait's going to be. Because I think a lot of people are used to Disney queues where you kind of, part of the queue is hidden, so you're in continual motion or regular motion, but you may kind of snake around the backside of the building or whatever, but you're always moving a bit. And this queue doesn't do that. This queue is rather compact in the space it's in, but it moves at a snail pace. I think this will help.
To do,
exactly.
And they don't even notice.
I think it'll really help pass the time.
That's cool. Awesome. Over on mysage.com this week, they, as far as I know, broke the news that despite the fact we've been talking about Year of a Million Dreams going on forever, some banners are coming down at Disneyland, which may not necessarily be Year of a Million Dreams, but when stuff gets that complicated, I always turn to fanboy.
Well, I admit that there's a lot going on right now in terms of the Parks and Resorts segment, so I don't want to hesitate. I mean, I don't want to hazard a guess as to what's really going on because no one really knows. But the Year of a Million Dreams was supposed to kick off the Where Dreams Come True marketing campaign, which was the first segment, as in all of Parks and Resorts, marketing slogan thingy. So, the Year of a Million Dreams is continuing. By law, it has to continue till the end of the year. Word on the street, I guess Main Street or Ball Road or Harbor or something like that, is that it's going to that the giveaway part's going to continue, at least at Disneyland, and that's where Disney Gallery closing and being turned into a version of the Cinderella Castle Suite it comes from.
Okay.
I don't know if the banner removal is just getting new banners that might be Year of a Million Dreams and less Where Dreams Come True focused, or if they're being replaced by something else, or if someone just didn't like the banners, or there's more to the story than I think most folks believe. I don't think it's just suddenly John Lasseter said he didn't want like the banners and the banners are being removed. I think there's more to it. I think there's a huge story underneath this story.
Okay.
Two things off of what Fanboy just said.
Yes, ma'am.
Firstly, for those people who haven't been to Disneyland, the Disney Gallery is located above their Pirates of the Caribbean attraction, and it was originally designed to be Walt's apartment, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the concept of transforming that now into a location where a guest can win a stay is very, very intriguing to a lot of, you know, really passionate Disney fans. I know others are very disappointed to see that space go away as kind of a salute to Disney history.
But mostly.
Especially on its 20th anniversary. They had an event like a week ago saying, hey, we're open. And this is where the rumor came from, is that, hey, we're celebrating 20 years. We'll be closing the end of the month.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Which is better than, what, the electrical parade closed after 24 years at Disneyland.
And then the other thing Fanboy mentioned, you know, Lasseter didn't, the rumor that the... Is it actually some people saying it was just a matter of John Lasseter didn't care for it? Or are you just throwing that out there?
No, I've been hearing rumors. I mean, message board people, not...
Because I'm just wondering, because you know how right now John Lasseter's kind of like the lightning rod in a good way? Like, everybody...
Sure.
Like, fans are kind of like, we love John. We're behind Lasseter 100%. I'm wondering if sometimes his name doesn't get attached to things just so people... Hopefully more people will like it, because likes it, and it's good, you know.
I actually saw him up on the crane starting to take down the wand yesterday.
It's cool. I mean, yeah. I think it's neat. I wonder if part of that, it was funny, it was something I was thinking of writing one of our contacts, you know, Bob Gurr, who worked with Walt. And you always kind of had this idea that those who worked for Walt... you know, they knew the real Walt and everything, but he had this way of kind of rallying the troops and getting kind of everybody together on a project, and they really seemed to protect him. I mean, even now, the way that mm-hmm. they talk about him, even though he's been gone for so many years, there's obviously, you know, a deep respect and everything. And I just wonder, I kind of get that impression about John Lasseter. People seem to talk about him in kind of that same way. I don't want to say reverential, because that's not the right word. But there's kind of a little protective nature in the way mm-hmm. they talk about him. And
yeah, there's some reverence, too.
I like that. That's cool to me.
What I'm waiting to hear, though, because people talk about Walt. People love Walt. People
yes.
respect Walt.
Yes,
but people also fear Walt. And mm-hmm. when people tell Walt stories, it's not a cuddly Walt.
No.
It's Walt would rip you in two when you screw up. And when you do a perfect job, you go, eh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm waiting to hear some of those stories about John Lasseter to see if that's the way it is inside there too, because I mean, frankly, when it comes to business like that, often nice guys, you know, don't
finish. We have heard stories. I mean, with the Chris Sanders situation,
oh, totally,
and the Jan Pingab, whoever the original director of Ratatouille, however you pronounce that name, that, you know, he didn't think, oh, well, you know, you're a buddy, you've been with the company a long time, we'll let you do the movie. I mean, he definitely, if he doesn't feel like it's going the right way, he'll cut you loose. It's not. The world is more cuddly now than it was when Walt was here.
Right.
Totally.
It's expected, especially in the businesses Disney's in. I mean, Judson Green started it. You know, the parks were Dick Nunes would just fire you on the spot. Then they'd be the guy behind saying, you're not really fired. You're a union cast member. You can't be fired. And, you know, that was just the way he worked. And then Judson Green came along, brought a little bit more heart to it, more motivation, more of that 90s, what they called the Disney way. Management style. So, I mean, it's not going to be like Walt as brusque, but he won't let bad product go for wrong reasons, apparently.
I'm interested to see what kind of stories we hear as more time rolls on, and as Lasseter's responsibilities, you know, shift, because some of the stories that I enjoy hearing are when people talk about how Walt got them to do something they never, ever, ever thought they could do.
Right.
And
right.
I'm really interested now that John Lasseter is more involved in the theme park element or whatever. I'm interested to see if some of the animators that he's worked with or some of the people who maybe were kind of pigeonholed by Disney for one thing or another, maybe he'll see something in them, or, you know, one of his team will see something in them, and they'll have a story like that in the future.
I did hear a rumor that had the show not closed, that Tony Baxter was set to take over the lead role in Tarzan on Broadway. they challenged him, and he turned out he was able to rise up to that challenge. But
you
the
are
show closed.
So strange.
Anyone can be Tarzan.
But not everyone should.
You guys are scary. That's a really funny thought.
Well, hey, it's a much bigger company now.
That treehouse was just research for, you know, he's a method actor.
The really sad part is they no longer own the Angels. because I heard Kim Irvine was actually practicing to be a pitcher.
Really?
Yeah.
So that would have been amazing.
But then they sold them.
I hear she has a great head for it.
Dude. Oh,
that's
man, that's a bad joke. Do we need to explain that joke? Now, if you don't understand that joke, post on the boards. They'll explain
then you're
it.
You're the lucky one.
They'll explain it.
All right, and speaking of Tarzan on Broadway.
They'll be dying to explain it.
Okay.
Very good.
Sorry.
Speaking of dying. Oh, wait. Maybe
Tarzan.
Maybe that's exactly, not the best segue.
Yeah, much to everyone's shock and surprise, Tarzan. Well,
who's okay. shocked and who's surprised?
The people who had tickets for today's show?
Good point. In the end, they got tickets to Good Morning America.
Is that serious?
No.
Okay, because I said today.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tarzan closed on Broadway last weekend, I believe. Yeah.
Sunday.
And Beauty and the Beast is closing.
The end of the month.
The end of the month. Now, that one's not closing for any reason other than it's run its course, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bomb.
It's not an abject failure. But Tarzan, unfortunately, is closing sooner than expected. Mary Poppins closed in England. It's still running here on Broadway, or, you know, up north on Broadway, but it did close in the UK where it opened originally. So I guess times are a little bit hard for Disney's theatrical. The Little Mermaid is coming soon.
But on the upside, that High School Musical tour is selling out.
Does that have anything at all to do with Disney theatrical?
Yeah, they did it.
They do? Okay.
There's the ICE tour, which they licensed, but the touring show.
Okay. And then On the Record.
That was a bomb.
Yeah. Aida, what's that considered?
I think sleeper hit. I mean, it made its money back.
Okay. So for a group that started with Beauty and the Beast and then went on to Lion King, and it was like, wow, Disney's really on to something. I guess they've hit about a bit of a harder times, but, you know, no one's perfect.
I think part of it is Mary Poppins is selling really well. I mean, it's not by no means a failure. The negative view of it is its performance at the Tonys. And
what happened there?
It didn't win. Oh, won one.
That performance. Yeah. Okay.
Thought you meant someone fell down. Hurt themselves. They did, as we like to call it, they Kelsey Grammered.
I wasn't going to go there.
But I think it's, you know, with Spamalot being inspired by a film, you know, Wicked being based on a, you know, fairly family-friendly show. It's inspired by the Wizard of Oz world, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast. Most of these recent successes have been these big Hollywood shows, mm-hmm. and I think they were looking for something different just because they're artists and they like different. So it went to something called Spring Awakening, which is really controversial and really pushing the envelope.
Okay.
So, I mean, Mary Poppins is a Disney spectacular, but at the same time, we've seen that. That's not what wins Tonys. I mean, but it will do very well. It will run its course. It will make lots of money. I'm not worried about Mary Poppins. Tarzan, on the other hand, that was a bomb. On the Record, bomb.
Little Mermaid, have you heard any buzz about that?
Well, Francesca Zambello, she directed Aladdin, a musical spectacular. So I hope she'll do it better this time. I think Tarzan closing and Beauty and the Beast closing was the best thing that happened to Little Mermaid. Because Disney Theatrical had intentions, and I don't know what happened, to make non-Disney musicals. And I think they have to. You can only have so many Disney-inspired musicals at one time. It's not like this week we're going to release Ratatouille, next week we're going to release Up, and week after Wall-E, and then follow that American Dog. It's a certain type of musical. So the idea was to have things like Aida, and one was Hoops, which was, I think, based on the story of the Harlem Globetrotters.
Cool.
And Sweet they had Brown. They had a spelling bee musical, but there was actually another spelling bee musical that got off the ground first, so that didn't happen. But I think Spellbound was the name of it.
Wow, we are in Florida.
Is it 3 o'clock?
And that heavy breathing is the dog. He's jumped up in my lap because of the thunder.
We got some thundering and lightning, and Happy doesn't like it.
Yeah, so he's in my lap.
So I think Little Mermaid will open, and I hope Tom Schumacher, or whoever's running the division at that time, we'll look at doing something different with his next show. Although Little Mermaid is supposed to be a little bit more cutting edge in the vein of The Lion King.
In looking at their lineup, I was kind of surprised by where Disney theatricals went, because Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King I think, wow, that was close. That was like lightning and thunder.
We interrupt this broadcast and we do a special.
Well, beep, beep. That was a little intimidating. Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King, I think, allowed families who had a theatrical interest to bring their children to the theater earlier in life than they, you know, you're not going to bring your little kids to Broadway, but
it's
you can
show.
Bring your kids to Beauty and the Beast. You can bring your kids to The Lion King because, for one thing, it's, you know, they're going to sit through it because it's a familiar story. It's got a lot of action, the pacing, and whatnot. But so I was kind of surprised by the choices that they made because Disney theatricals to me was a chance for theater goers to bring their children to introduce them to something that they loved. And with Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King, I think the pacing and the energy level and just the story itself were more conducive to bringing your small kids, whereas Mary Poppins, from my understanding, is more dark than the, you know, Sherman Brothers film. So they even, you know, I guess in London, were they issuing kind of warnings about, you know, maybe mm-hmm. frightening to small children? And Tarzan, the pacing and whatnot, it's not kind of that, I don't know, it doesn't have that family, you know, bring your four-year-old to come try out the theater kind of feel that Beauty and the Beast and to some extent Lion King did have. So I don't know, I just sometimes wondered about that. I think Little Mermaid could have that, because I think Little Mermaid is much more appealing to a broader audience, even younger kids, but it'll be interesting.
I hear that when they were working on Mary Poppins, they actually considered it calling Mary Poppins parentheses scary because of... Okay.
I don't get it.
That's what they did with the Fantasyland attraction,
that was the original,
right?
Snow White. It was Snow White Adventures. Scary.
Scary.
And then they renamed it
Snow White Scary Adventures.
Wow.
I know.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. Because you'd think they would be smart enough to name it Snow White Scary Adventures to begin with. Like, remember when they used to, they don't do it anymore, but Universal used to put PG-13 logos on?
No, like what?
Like Terminator 2 or Jaws or anything that
wasn't. Yeah.
I mean, 99% of their attractions. But I wonder if they got in trouble with the MPAA because now they just put like a warning on it.
Jaws. Everyone should go see Jaws.
That's a ride that gets everyone from like
4 to 104.
I remember where we were. We were on the boat from the Portofino Bay to City Walk, and I was like expecting Jaws to come popping up at any moment.
And save you from having to go to City Walk.
Really? Because I did see an old woman on a bicycle.
Oh, very funny.
Does anybody besides the three of us here know what that means?
The lake where they filmed Jaws. Well, no, not where they filmed Jaws. Where they set up the Jaws mechanical figure for the Universal Studios guests also is the backdrop of
Cabot Cove.
Cabot Cove.
Murder, She Wrote.
Where Jessica Fletcher used to ride her little bicycle.
Yes.
If you look really closely. No. Actually, I guess there is some episode of like The Bionic Woman or Six Million Dollar Man or something where you can actually, supposedly in one of the shots, there's a gaff where you can see one of the old tram tours somewhere in the background or something.
Speaking of, have you seen commercials for The Bionic Woman?
No, I haven't.
I've seen a couple of commercials.
I know they're coming back, but I haven't seen them.
I'm very excited.
I have a question. They took the old show. Did they make it
bigger?
Faster.
Stronger, faster.
Ability to squeeze tennis balls with their bare hands. Yeah, they did.
Oh, good.
Oh. Our good friend Greg Miletic, laughingplace.com/blog/Miletic.
Oh, I just have something about the, you know, so the $6 million man, if they redid that, would it have to be like the $6 billion man or something? Because I see what WDI does for $6 million, and you can't build a man.
You barely build a heat lamp.
Yeah.
But it's different now because in some ways some of that technology would be even cheaper. So maybe it'd be a wash and you could stick with $6 million.
Like the way computers cost the same now mm-hmm. than they did 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're wrong, fanboy.
Okay, Lucky the Dinosaur, essentially a bionic dinosaur. That cost a lot more than $6 million.
But that was research and development.
Oh, so... Basically, you're telling me Oriental Land Company paid for it, and we just can now build a man.
Well, yes.
Okay.
Greg Miletic.
That's what I was going to say. Sorry.
He's got some friends in North Carolina. They're huge Disney World fans, and they're going to Disneyland for the first time.
Oh,
and he thought
cool.
he would give them some help on things a huge Disney World fan should make sure they check out at the older, smaller brother. So we thought we would give him some help on what you would recommend to a Disney World fanatic on their first trip to Disneyland, not just necessarily the attractions to hit, but what to do to understand why Disneyland, despite the fact it's tiny and old, is still
good.
Still good. So what would you recommend, Rebecca? What would you tell these people?
Well, if they enjoy evening entertainment, Fantasmic and the fireworks, because they're very to me, they're very different than what you would have here, but yet similar enough, you know, so you can see how they handle it in that area. I know on the list here he has Mr. Toad, Casey Jr., Storybook Canal Boats, and Tiki Room. I agree with all of those. What do you guys think?
Fanboy, I'm sure you encounter this all the time in your daily life. You know, you know a lot of Disney World cast members, and I'm sure occasionally they make their pilgrimage back.
Well, when I talk to cast members, I usually tell them, like, go see how they do guest control, because they do it completely different. But
we were just talking about that with Craig DeZern, who's the head media guy. I don't remember his official title.
Head media guy.
Okay. He was talking about Fantasmic, leaving Fantasmic, and how there, you know, much how different the experience is, because at Magic Kingdom, even during its most crowded times, it's still got rather broad walkways and whatnot, whereas Disneyland is a much more quaint and intimate experience, which means there's more people in a smaller space, on a smaller space at times within Disneyland versus Magic Kingdom experience. And he talked about the all the cast members who direct you which way to go in their bright yellow jackets and their red flashlights, which I can't really think of anything similar here at Magic Kingdom at all, even though they, you know, they'll have bigger numbers at Magic Kingdom than Disneyland, but you don't see the same kind of guest control forces out. What do you recommend, Fanboy, to somebody going, come on?
Well, if you're a history buff, I mean, the Walk and Waltz Footsteps Tour, you know, and going up to the gallery while it's still open, whatever's going on with that. And just seeing things like, you know, the Wishing Well and hearing the stories, Herb Ryman's Tree. I mean, get an appreciation for the things that that are there and why they are there. Like the Main Street Cinema. The story behind the Opera House. I mean, it, you know, try and find someone that can tell you those things, because that's what Disneyland has, history and legacy, which Disney World's getting, but it's a couple years.
Now, Greg, in his email, says that he's specifically looking for the pragmatic, down-to-earth stuff that's worth checking out. Not so much a grand overview of how the parks look and feel, but he wants to know, what are the can't-miss? If you've been to Disney World, what's the can't-miss when you go to Disneyland?
Fantasmic.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Well, the other thing, because, I mean, history is important. If they're a big Disney World fan, they may be interested in the history as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know some are. Totally. That spike that was once the exact center of Disneyland.
Oh, don't go there. Never was, never will be.
Okay.
The monorail. The Disney World people need to go on the Disneyland monorail.
Yeah,
system,
it's very
where
different.
You have to remain seated. And
I think for a person who's been to Disney World many times, going to Disneyland, to really get a strong feel for the difference, stay at the Grand Californian Hotel, walk into DCA, stroll over to Disneyland, and then walk through downtown Disney and realize you have not seen a bus this whole time. That is the difference between Disneyland and Disney World to me.
It's a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's you can park hop like that.
Yeah,
and
I mean, you can treat it like another land. Just walk back and forth, and it's been done many times. Got my fast pass at Soarin. Now I got my fast pass at Space Mountain.
Back when they used to have like entry gates and re-entry gates, and you would go and you'd see that there'd be no line at the re-entry gates at Disneyland, and there'd be no lines to get into DCA. You'd go into DCA, use your ticket, go out, get your hand stamp, and then go in the re-entry gates of Disneyland. So you didn't have to just, I mean, it might not have been quicker, but at least you weren't standing in line.
Totally. Totally remember that. That's awesome.
Oh, that's just funny.
But as far as attractions go, I think Storybook Land is always near the top of my list. But at the top of the list is Matterhorn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun attraction. It's also so historic, being the first tubular steel, being the first coaster with multiple cars on a track.
You can play basketball.
You can play basketball up there. Tinkerbell, she has a house up there. And, you know, she has...
That's the thing. Tinkerbell doesn't fall from the castle. She descends gracefully from Matterhorn Mountain.
So... check out the Matterhorn, and it'll remind you of Space Mountain at Walt Disney World.
That's not the thing to check out. Space Mountain. That's
over now with the music, right?
Yeah, but well, they have the old rehab.
Music.
I mean,
oh, when we go, it'll be the old new music. It'll be the Dick Dale stuff.
We never did.
No, not the Dick Dale stuff. That's
the old music.
Oh,
it'll be
before that. It was no music. Now then, it went old music. Then it was
old new music.
And then new music. And now it's back to old new music, which is new again.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that because you're right. I didn't do that when we were out there
Michael
for the 50th.
It's Michael Giacchino, the guy that did the music in Ratatouille you love so much.
I like the music from The Incredibles.
I was going to say, the music from The Incredibles that I love so much. Yeah.
And Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And Muppet Wizard of Oz. And
he did the music for Lost?
Yeah.
When the thing is coming out of and into focus? That's his?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool stuff.
So there you go. Hope that helps any of you Disney World fanatics who are heading over to the left coast. Next time we're going to talk about what you want to see at Hong Kong Disneyland. No?
Dunkers? Do it in all three languages just to, because you need something to do there.
And finally, got a bit of reader mail I'd like to read today. This was sent in by Jonathan.
Hey, I thought of another one. Splash Mountain. I think Splash Mountain is don't miss out there in California. I think it's a great attraction.
Especially if you don't like seeing next to people.
Now, wait. Is it? It's not. I mean, it's different. It's not that different.
I think it is.
Yeah?
For me, it is.
And I prefer Disney World, actually.
I know you do.
I do, too.
Yeah. No, I probably do, too.
But it's worth seeing the other.
I think it's worth seeing the other, so you have the contrast. Yeah.
I recommend the Tomorrowland train station.
The Tomorrowland. Oh, right. The you can't not see the primeval world.
And Seasons of the Vine is not to be missed.
No, you can miss that.
Okay. Right. Bodine Bakery Tour?
You can miss
Mission
that.
Mission Tortilla? Yeah.
That's not so important.
Jumping Jellyfish?
Not so important. Over there, I think you should catch.
Oh, no, something serious. I'm serious. All seriousness. The entertainment all around at Disneyland, the atmosphere entertainment, the block party bash, which we're getting here, but that's not my point. All of that is, I think, far superior. No.
He's gone.
Yeah. But, I mean, everything from the Dapper Dans to.
Yeah, totally.
The fireworks. I mean, the entertainment there is just, I think a cultural thing, and the focus is different. I'm not trying to berate Disney World Entertainment, but
berate.
Speaking
of berate, Haunted Mansion.
I don't know. Haunted Mansion's kind of very similar.
But the bride, the attic.
Or you can come here and not that I
not yet
soon.
Are they definitely doing that?
That's been the rumor.
I mean, I can neither confirm nor deny, but yes.
All right, you heard it here first. They're definitely doing that.
That's been the rumor forever.
Yeah.
And they're going to change the portrait gallery. I'll stop now.
Those are what the rumors are out there. Isn't that what we just saw? Didn't Kevin have that big long list over at MySage?
I also heard that Exotencio, they're going to let him out.
Let me out of here.
Which is nice because, you know, with Pirates being so popular... He needs to go over there and tell people that there'd be swallows ahead.
And Davy Jones is a waterfall.
Prepare to alter course.
You know, when Exotencio dies, which is hopefully years away from now.
Many years.
Do you think someone's going to go, playful spooks have interrupted your tour. Please remain seated in your doom buggy.
Won't that take on kind of a creepy nature?
I don't even want to think about
it. I don't know why, but, you know, Thurl Ravenscroft stuff doesn't. Oh, no, it did that one thing. Do you remember when we were at, after Thurl died?
Thurl died?
Yes.
We went.
He's still great, though.
We went someplace. It was someplace at Disneyland, and his voice was there just, like, out of the blue. We didn't remember it being there, but because we had just read about his death, it was kind of, whoa.
You know what's creepy is hearing, like, because Jack Wagner has all that generic, like, you know, please keep moving down the aisle. When you hear him at a park that opened long after he died, like DCA or Animal Kingdom, and they're just using old audio, until recently, he still did the opening day rope drop at Disneyland, and, I mean, he's still throughout the place. I mean, Orlando International Airport, and you're like, you've been dead for so long. But it's nice to, you know, all that being said, you know, I heard that they're going to be, I heard a rumor that they're going to be changing the music to the Christmas parade. And Christmas parade at Disney World could use a little update. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to me it's sad to think that Jack Wagner intro might be gone because a little, you know, it's sad to see a little piece of that go every time.
When I think of Jack Wagner, the first spiel of his that comes to my mind is, the weatherman always says, into every life a little rain must fall.
And the same is true here at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Many of our attractions will remain chosen attractions will be remain and then basically you're not getting your money back.
Yeah, that's a comforting, I don't know, even you show up, it's raining, you hear that, all is well with the world.
If I'm ever head of Disney, which will hopefully never happen, I am bringing back the voice of Disneyland and Disney World. There's going to be one guy that does all of that. I mean, not, you know, I mean, for creative reasons, you know, parades and stuff could have their own Julie Andrews, because apparently she's very popular. But they, there's something reassuring of knowing that there's a spokesperson of Disneyland.
That guy.
That guy. Well, maybe it'll be a magical moment. Congratulations. Because you've won the Voice of Disneyland experience.
Promise me, if you are president, head of Disney at that point, if it's still going on, you will end the Year of a Million Dreams.
I don't know. It's very successful.
Jonathan
people
writes.
It. People totally
love it. I
love
it, too.
Not
but
to
I'm not sure I would
John.
In 15 years. So. Jonathan, touche, not to be confused with Captain John, wrote us an email. He called it a short and sweet message. I thought Alien Encounter was the best attraction in Walt Disney theme park history, period. No other attraction has had as deep of a backstory, and no other attraction story has flowed any better. Unfortunately, I am not a local, so I probably only saw the show a little over 50 times in its 8 short years.
Wow.
But I do not expect to see an attraction top it in my lifetime. How anyone could not appreciate the backstory and story of this attraction blows my mind. It has been said on this show before that at least one of us thinks Alien Attraction was the most inappropriate Disney attraction of all time, and also one of the not-so-good ones.
Is that me, or is that you?
Perhaps both of us.
Oh, okay.
So I'm guessing that's what Jonathan's writing in response to.
Yeah, that, I mean, it had some. It was neat to create the sensory thriller, don't get me wrong, but I'm not as much on the appropriate thing as much as it just doesn't. I mean, you go in this chamber, and you have these things that come down to your shoulders and pop up. And then the alien is supposed to jump on your shoulders. Like, I don't know that there's these things that go up and down and land on my shoulders. And they pipe in all these screaming, and when you're in an empty show.
That's my mother-in-law.
Yeah, there's nobody there. I'm all by myself. That's just funny. I mean, first time I saw it, I laughed all the way through it. And, I mean, story is great, but yeah. It's not a Pixar movie.
I appreciate your email, Jonathan, because I know some people who hate Alien Encounter, and I know some people who think, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, many other attractions, not great. You're the first person I've heard who just thinks it's, what do they say, the bee's knees. And it's always good to hear different opinions like that. 50 times, I think I wrote it maybe 3.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I'm sorry it's gone. I hope you like Stitch. And
I just had a chili dog.
Thanks for writing. I really do appreciate your writing, though, because it is nice to hear someone who thinks it was fabulous. I hear a lot of people who think the original Figment ride was fabulous, and that's one. When I rode that, I said, literally, that's the worst Disney attraction I've ever been on.
The one I can't get that people love, Peter Pan's Flight.
I love that ride.
Watch your mouth, young man.
Look, fiber optic lights. Oh, look.
Do you realize you're flying, and that's like London underneath? The cars are moving?
I understand I'm flying, but I don't care.
We're talking Disneyland. Disney World doesn't count. Disneyland is the Peter Pan, right?
It's still, I'm just still flying over a city.
Hey, mine was Mr. Toad here.
Oh,
I agree with
Mr.
Toad.
I really didn't understand all the
hoopla.
People felt deeply attached and really connected to that. And I was like, it's okay. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was, to me, there was no more value to it than any of the other Fantasyland dark rides. So I was kind of surprised.
So I'd like to hear your opinions on that. Podcast, laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408, or the discussion boards. What's an attraction that most people think it's great that even if you – not just that you don't like it, but you just don't think it's all that great. Like Pirates I don't like, but I realize it's a great attraction. It's just not my thing. What are some that you think – you don't think are necessarily good even though the world thinks they're fabulous?
What attraction do you like that no one else does?
Me? Can't really think of. I mean, People Mover, but a lot of people like that. Casey Jr. Are there many attractions
Pinocchio.
That people don't like?
I like Pinocchio. And I think that among the dark rides, it is one of the more. It is not among the most loved of the dark rides. And I like Pinocchio.
I can't think of an attraction that I think is more underrated by the public than Pinocchio. It is the best of the dark of the doobie dark rides, since we don't want to get into that whole discussion.
Hey, this guy says he was went on Alien Encounter a little over 50 times in the 8 years it was open. Can you think of an attraction that you've been on 50 times within a period of time like that?
I started going to Disneyland in, you know, as a regular in May of 1995. By August of 1995, the People Mover had run for its last time. I promise you, I wrote it more than 100 times in that period.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've regularly... I mean, if I like an attraction, I can't... there's probably a few attractions of the e-ticket variety that I've done less than 50 times.
What about
in
Tiki
shows.
Room?
Tiki? Oh, yeah. I would do Tiki Room and People Mover, the ones I would do every single trip to Disneyland. But the People Mover was closed half the time, so... Tiki Room, all the time. Shows, no question. Magic Kingdom Cabaret.
Right, yeah, that's what I think of. When I think of things that I've done 50 or more times in a very short period,
I think of shows. When I started going, I started just keeping a text file that I believe I still have somewhere.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Of everything I was doing, probably for about, 6 months or so. And I saw Fantasmic. I think I got up to like 160 times before I finally stopped counting.
In how short a period of time?
No more than 6 months. Well, does that even make sense? Probably during the summer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I saw it a lot. Because that was back when they would do three shows every single night. And I would always see at least two shows, mm-hmm. often all three, in the same spot, right over the bridge, right over the entrance to Pirates. I would go there 3 hours early and just hang out, meet people, and talk. I was the ultimate Disney, I'd like to say geek. Some might call it loser. But
that's good. But it was fun. Now that I don't, we've been here and we've all seen this like Nemo musical a bunch of times and things like that, but we don't have the passion or the time to go do things hundreds of times like we used to.
I miss it. I mean, my life, my first year of Disney fandom, my life pretty much ground to a halt. I mean, I remember I've been self-employed forever, and I remember my income dropped that year a humongous amount. I just almost never worked. Almost every day I went to the park. And it wasn't all day necessarily, but my day, my week, my time was planned around going to Disney, watching Fantasmic, hanging out at Rods, seeing what friends were there, riding the People Mover in Tiki Room. I mean, looking back now, perhaps it wasn't, the healthiest thing in the world, and I did move past it. But I don't look back and go, boy, what a waste. I look back and go, that was some of the funnest time in my entire life. I absolutely enjoyed it. It was great.
A preview of retirement is kind of how I imagine that. Like, you wake up sort of at 9, and you, we'll go to Disneyland, walk through, go get your cheese dog over at Kilt Corner or whatever, and go see some whatever's playing at Fantasyland Theater. And just, it sounds nice.
It was life. I mean, I don't want to go back and do it now, but I definitely look back fondly upon it. It was fun.
I remember because I met you shortly after that. Mm-hmm. I mean, while you were in that vein. And as soon as work was over for me, I'd jump in the car and travel off to Disneyland 3 or 4 times a week. I'd travel down there. So usually it was Saturday and Sunday, and then probably Tuesday and Thursday, I'd make it down to Disneyland and catch up with you and the writer and John, who now does the Disney blog.
Yep. Oh, man.
And we'd watch Fantasmic.
Hang out at Rye. Spent a lot of time hanging out at Rye.
I learned how to play a card game called Communism. We used to play cards up at the... There was this little balcony area of the Plaza Pavilion.
Drink.
The Plaza Pavilion. There was this little There was this little like patio area, and we used to just kind of sit over there and play cards. We were kind of out of the way. The restaurant wasn't open, so it wasn't like we were taking tables from somebody.
Do you remember that when Carnation used to be over where Carnation stages, they used to like have beers and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
I miss that. That brought back those memories. That was like the ultimate chill place at Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. Sometime, I don't know how many people who listen to this are familiar with the Disneyland community, either now or the way it was then, but we certainly were a part of that for at least a couple years. And it's an interesting thing for people who are Disney fans but don't know that whole side. It's an interesting thing. We should talk about that at some point, just the Disneyland community back then, some of the stuff that went on that people never would have guessed.
I know.
And I don't mean horrible stuff either. Just
stuff
that
went
on that people never would have thought that. Here's this theme park that people save all their lives to go to that's known the whole world round, and yet there's this group of maybe, 500 or 1,000 people where it's like their local bar. There's just the stuff that goes on like does it any other gathering place.
There were probably, maybe 100 or so people that if Disneyland had shut down their gates, I would never see them again.
Absolutely.
But yet I saw them every week, talked to them about their job. You never talked to them in such depth that you actually knew them.
You didn't know them at all.
Sometimes they were just people that you regularly saw, so they had nicknames.
two points come to me with that thought. One is, that's a real difference between Disney World and Disneyland.
Oh,
and Disney World's getting more, but Disneyland, a lot of people with their annual passes treat it like it's a neighborhood park.
Totally.
Like, they just go there, read the paper in town square,
mm-hmm.
get something to eat, you know, and go home. I mean, that's...
Listen to music,
yeah.
feed the ducks, literally,
yeah.
whatever.
And then, the other, I think if this caveman show doesn't pick up on ABC, it's just like Cheers. We got a sitcom. You don't need to buy a set, just do it.
So often I've thought about writing a book about it. I mean, it wouldn't be any bestseller, but it would be interesting. And I think people would be very interested to find out just how things worked over there in that era. And for all I know, to this day, but we're no longer a part of it, so I don't know. Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. You've heard the topics we want to hear from you on, or anything else that is on your mind. Before we close, I'd like to go around our abbreviated table and get a final word from Fanboy.
Well, I think we got a big week. I've teased it on my blog. A lot of Disney stuff probably coming out of the woodworks July 17th. Obviously, all the Disney fans are waiting because the city council will be meeting and just doing something with the SOAR campaign and that housing thing. So I know July 17th will have a special day in Disney fans' hearts this year. I just found out I can now download and rent movies. Disney movies on my Xbox 360, which would be great if I had an Xbox 360.
I was going to say, man, you haven't had me over.
I was thinking, you know, Steve Jobs, I could only buy Apple products, and next thing I know. Yeah, so all those people that keep saying Bob Iger is, like, now in Steve Jobs' pocket and won't do anything with other, yeah, apparently not.
Anyway, Rebecca?
Recently, I added some new titles to the rotation of Laughing Place Radio. One of them I'm very excited about, and it'll be coming to the lineups tonight or tomorrow, is an album called Bossa Nova Disney. And I had been wanting it for quite a while and finally was able to get a copy from eBay. I was able to purchase a CD because I missed it when it was for sale here at the resorts. And the Bossa Nova Disney album, it features Latin American artists' take on classic Disney songs. And I always love hearing different renditions of classic Disney melodies, especially in other languages. I just find it really beautiful and interesting. And then I also have, I also added the soundtrack of Ratatouille, which is beautiful. It's a little, we don't run score as much, so you won't hear as many of the Ratatouille songs. And then another album, which I had no idea even existed, and I found it on iTunes, was Walt Disney World Band. And it's a recording from 1972 of the Walt Disney World Band. And it's, I don't know, there's just something about the songs that they play or whatever. You just feel transported. I put it in, and it was like, you know, I'm on Main Street, USA. So I was really excited to find
that. I miss the Disney World Band. I mean, as nice as the Main Street Philharmonic is, it's no Disney World Band.
Next week, Rebecca and I and Fanboy will be traveling down to Tampa for our annual pilgrimage to watch the world's greatest baseball team, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, as they take on the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. We love to go down there every year. We used to be, quarter-season ticket holders, plus however many other games we could sneak in back in California. Since we moved here, they come to Tampa usually once a year, so we go down and see two of the games. It's nice in Tampa. They don't have a very big fan base, so we can show up 5 minutes before game time and buy the best seats in the house right over our team's dugout. And we stay at a hotel down there. I think last year we went dolphin watching on the St. Pete, or on Tampa Bay from St. Pete. It's a blast. Really nice area down there. And
yeah, lovely stadium.
The stadium is nothing to write home about, but it's the only dome I've been in, so it's interesting. So this has nothing to do
with... And we usually get harassed by their mascot, which is fun.
Yeah.
Grab my jacket, wiped his armpits with it, stuff
like
that.
Yeah, they have a great mascot.
They do.
Raymond?
Was he a stingray?
He's a manatee.
I don't think he's a manatee.
He's got the little manatee mustache.
So looking forward to that. Nothing to do with Disney, but the Angels used to be owned by Disney, so I'm going with it. So.
Well, that's the whole reason why you went opening day back in the day.
We're just going to go. We'll watch. We'll talk business.
I loved baseball, and then I married a guy who wasn't all that interested in baseball, and it took until we married in 97 and 2002. Ooh. Fanboy and Doobie decide, hey, let's get opening day tickets to see Disney's baseball team.
Yep.
We went. They both enjoyed it.
They lost.
Oh, they lost. It was, no, not a good game at all.
6-1, I think.
And I think it was actually a shutout. I think it was 6-0. Apier pitched. And then we had such a good time. We bought a 20-game pack that day, and slowly watched as more and more people started coming to the ballpark, because next thing we knew, we were going to the World Series!
Who knew? We went to the playoffs, we went to the World Series, we were there in the outfield for Game 7 when Darren Erstad caught the ball to end the game. And who knew? This whim turned into getting to go to the World Series. That was the year.
And the talk that you hear now is what would happen pretty much through the ball game. So I would bring my scorecard and my baseball and my headphones and pretty much tune them out, listening to the play-by-play, keeping
score. Kind of like you guys are doing now.
And the two of them would prattle on about Disney. And so, we would see the fireworks from Disneyland at the right time. And
so if you have a Little League team or any sort of, golf intramurals squad, you can pay us to go to your games to help you win.
We make people win series, World Series.
Yeah. Remember when we went to see Tampa Bay take on the Texas Rangers over at...
They swept, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay swept them.
We are good luck charms.
Yep.
So. We're magically delicious.
Anyway, podcast.com, 864-1848, and until next week...
What?
Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408, or you can post a message on our discussion boards.
And until next week, play ball.